Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki. Then the Lord personally entered the city, accompanied by elderly relatives and invalid brahmanas and their wives, all offering benedictions and singing the glories of the Lord. Also others praise the glories of the Lord. Purport. The brahmanas in society were never attentive to banking money for future retired life. When they were old invalids, they used to approach the assembly of the kings and simply by praising the glorious deeds performed by the kings, along with their wives, they would be provided with all necessities of life. Such brahmanas were not, so to speak, flatterers of the king, but the kings were actually glorified by their actions, and they were sincerely still more encouraged in pious acts by such brahmanas in a dignified way. Lord Sri Krishna is worthy of all glories, and the praying brahmanas and others were glorified themselves by chanting the glories of the Lord. So translation again. Then the Lord personally entered the city, accompanied by elderly relatives and invalid brahmanas with their wives, all offering benedictions and singing the glories of the Lord. Others also praise the glories of the Lord. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyayavacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Hare 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 Krishna. So thank you for allowing me to be here and have the opportunity for my twice a year public embarrassment, which is called Bhagavatam class. But I speak for my own purification, and I would like to seek the blessings of all the senior Vaishnavas in the room. It's Raghunath Prabhu, Radhakanta Prabhu, Sutapa Prabhu, Ajagovinda Prabhu, Jamuna Bihari Prabhu, Prajabhumi Mataji, Sri Kama Mataji, Ujjwala Bhakti Mataji, and any others I may have missed out. So I do seek your blessings so I can say something useful. Like I always say, I don't really know much philosophy. I just got like 10 points, which I switched the order, so it sounds like a different class, but it's the same thing. So if you heard my class before and if you want to do something more useful with your human form of life, then feel free to do so. I haven't given many classes before in the temple, maybe just like two or three. And this is kind of my first class after I changed ashram a few months ago. And today's verse I find very relevant because it's also about varnashram and ashramas and varnas. And, while I was a brahmachari, none of this really mattered. It was all about just stay in the ashram, just serve Krishna. But now it's becoming more and more relevant. But yeah, I just wanted to say that I spent 10 years in the ashram, which was good fun. I really enjoyed it, the best 10 years of my life. I didn't have to worry about anything except waking up every morning, going for morning program and devotional service for the rest of the day. So it was really good. Now, since I've changed ashram, there's so many challenges. First of all, You know, it was a nightmare getting used to wearing track bottoms because I'd never worn tracksuit bottoms before. You know, then it was sleeping on a bed, which, you know, I used to wake up with a backache every day. And, you know, and then living in that house at the back is just so quiet, it's almost deafening. Whereas here it was like living on the M1, living in the ashram. So I miss all those days, you know, every morning when you wake up and sometimes some brahmachari is rolled over and he's ended up in your sleeping bag, you know, like that. So it was all good fun. So Mohan Prabhu, stay in the ashram. it's good stuff anyway. Like that. And well, I'm kind of glad that I gave the best years of my life to the Krishna consciousness movement. I probably didn't do much, but there's a lot of devotees here who are doing so many amazing things and amazing services, but at least it kept me away from worse things I could have been doing if I was out there. You know, when you join the ashram, you have like big ambitions and stuff, and you're like, okay, you know, let's do something amazing. Let's do something big, okay, for the Krishna consciousness movement. After a few years, it goes to like, okay, let's do something. Okay, even that's good enough. And then a few years later, it's like, okay, even if you don't do anything, just don't do anything bad. Just don't get in the way of other people who are trying to do something. So anyway, either way, I did my 10 years. It was good fun. Just to let you know the status of my ashram, this is not a news report, but it's very funny because the day after I changed ashram, people came up to me and goes, oh, so are you married now? I'm like, no, I just changed ashram. Or they would go like, welcome to the Grihastha ashram. Okay. Or they would go something like, so who's the lady? Or, you know, like, so, you know, just so you know, it doesn't work like that. You don't change ashram because you find a lady, you make a decision, you change ashram. And changing ashram doesn't mean you're married straight away, okay? So there is a period called a snataka, which is a transition stage between two ashrams. So griha means home, and stha means situated. So one who is situated in a home is a grihastha. And home doesn't mean a house. House is a building. Home means wife, so unless you have a wife and family and a house, you're not really a grihastha. So anyway, that's me. I'm done. Okay, speaking about the Bhagavatam, I always get, like, after my classes, I always get chastised by Sutapa Prabhu, like, what you do? Stop talking faff, can you read the Bhagavatam and talk about the Bhagavatam in the class and get more deeper into the Acharya's commentaries and speak something spiritual instead of just, you know, cracking jokes or something. So I'll try and be more serious today. I did look up Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's Saratha Darshini to see what I can get from there, but somehow or the other it always works out that there's pages and pages of commentary, but on the verse I get there's usually either no commentary or like one line. So there wasn't anything in today's thing. So I had to come up with stuff based on Prabhupada's purport. And I like to use real-life examples. I've mixed a few things up, but I'll put a few stories from Shastra in there as well, just to keep things balanced and keep Sutapa Prabhu happy. So I'm slowly learning from the world out there that the bodily concept of life is actually quite strong. We're kind of sheltered in a society where spiritual life is the goal and it's the aim. And even though may or may not be practically, but at least on a theoretical level, we try to look beyond the body. But in the world out there, it's like even the theory and the practice, everything is about the body, and it's just like so strong, like the bodily concept. I'll give you an example. I won't get into too much detail, but I was recently in Ireland this weekend. Some people who used to come to Krishna Wisdom, we used to cultivate them, so they kind of progress to a certain level. But then they moved to Ireland, so they don't have any association there. They're in the middle of nowhere. So they invited me. They said, why don't you come and spend a few days, and then we can do some kirtan, and, you know, we went to Dublin and stuff. But anyway, so I was there in the house, and one night they were watching television. So I haven't seen television in like 15 years. I don't know what shows are on there when people talk about celebrities, you know, so-called famous celebrities. I'm like, oh. And they go like, what planet you've been living on, you know? So I don't really know someone, so I thought, okay, let's try it out. Let's see what this television looks like. So anyway, so I went and sat with them for a while. And there was a show on, some of you may know it, it's called I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. So I don't know, I don't know if you know, but anyway, they take a bunch of celebrities, they stick them in a jungle, and they're meant to do like different tasks every day. So anyway, one of the celebrities there was a lady, but she didn't look very feminine. So anyway, it turned out, I asked them what it was, and basically there was this guy who started off life as, okay, maybe I shouldn't mention names. He started off life as a man, and then at some point in his life he decided he didn't want to be a man, he wanted to be a lady. So he changed his gender and now he's a lady, but you know, he still like behaves like a man, so he's got like long hair and, you know, he's obviously got a gender change, but it's still like, hey, what's up, you know? And you know, the voice is very like manly, so he doesn't look very, he's meant to be a woman, but he still behaves like a man. But I was thinking how, he's a famous guy as well. In the 80s, 90s, he won a lot of Olympic gold, decathlon medals, and he was popular. He was hailed as America's greatest athlete, and just, he also became later on popular because he's the stepdad of some famous celebrities. I'm not going to name, but their name starts with a car and ends with Dacians. So, so popular guy. But but then, so they're sitting in this camp and they're having this conversation. And then some people asked him, so when did you decide you wanted to be a woman? And he goes, well, you know, I always wanted to be a lady since I was 14. But now he's 70, and he only recently got the change done. And I'm like, no, man, why at 70? You know, if you wanted to do it, you could have done it earlier. But lived all his life as a guy, and then at 70, he decided to get the change. But it's really funny, because what happens is the Varnashram system, or in general, like birth, death, old age, and disease, Krishna's designed it in such a way that even if you don't take up a spiritual path, when you go through disease, when you go through old age, it's naturally meant to help you become detached from the body, isn't it? We're most detached from the body when we are, you know, when we're in trouble, when the body is going through health issues, or when we get a bit older or something. But what happens is if you don't have the knowledge or if you don't have the understanding, then, you know, people go through life and then they squeeze out as much pleasure as they can from the body. And they get to 70 and they're like, okay, there's nothing more I can do with this body, so let's change the body and try and derive some pleasure out of that instead of going in a more spiritual direction or being more detached. So, anyway, I'm going to stop that thing there. But I was just thinking what's going on with the world, you know? So the goal of Varnashram system is actually to help us become detached from the body. And I'll come to the points that Prabhupada talks about in this verse in a minute. But I just wanted to give an overview of my understanding of Varnashram, because it's very, very relevant. And Prabhupada actually did want to make Varnashram more prominent in ISKCON, but he never had a time. And Prabhupada did say that 50% of my work is still not done. And since nowadays everyone's talking about Varnashram, I might as well have a go at it, since the verse allows me to. So Varnashram system basically acknowledges two things. The first thing is that we have a certain psycho-physical makeup and a certain type of nature. But the second thing it also acknowledges is that life is short and we're all going to die. So the idea is the psychological makeup is arranged in four varnas and four ashrams in such a way that it engages you, but at the same time, it's meant to detach you. So by the time you get to the end of your life, assuming you live for your whole lifetime, then you're naturally detached and your focus is more spiritual. And hopefully at the end of that, you'll go back to Godhead. So this psychological makeup, first of all, is in four varnas, which are the Brahmanas, the Kshatriyas, the Vaishyas, and Shudras. So based on these four varnas, this is psychological makeup, just to kind of put it out there a bit more, that it's not based on one's birth, it's based on one's psychology. But it's kind of assumed that if you're born and brought up in a certain environment, you're in there because of your karma, and because you're in a certain environment, it's more likely that you'll be of the same psychological makeup, but it's not guaranteed. Like that. So based on these four varnas, one situates oneself in one of four ashrams. The Brahmanas have four ashrams, so they go through brahmachari life, then grihastha, vanaprastha, and then they take sannyas, like that. Kshatriyas have three ashrams. So they have brahmachari, grihastha, and vanaprastha. So you wouldn't see Kshatriyas taking sannyas. We have examples in the Bhagavatam, in the first canto of which comes later on, how Yudhishthira Maharaj leaves home and he takes vanaprastha. So all the brothers and Draupadi even, they all go vanaprastha, they go into the forest like that. We also know the example of Bharat Maharaj, who left his kingdom and went into the forest. We also know the example of Parikshit Maharaj, based on whom the whole Bhagavatam is spoken. He also, like, immediately left home and went to the forest, because that's what you do. But you wouldn't hear of Kshatriyas taking sannyas. Sannyas is for brahmanas. And Prabhupada's mission was to create brahmanas in society, and that's why he used to give sannyas. Prabhupada also said, not everyone needs to get Brahmin initiated. And he also said that not everyone needs to take sannyas. But as a general rule, if you're a brahmana, then you would take sannyas. So that's also encouraged in our society. So brahmana is obviously a psychological makeup. But at the same time, at least those of us who are second initiated should also look forward, or at least plan to go through vanaprastha and sannyas at some point. We will speak about that in a minute. Then we have Vaishyas, and Vaishyas only have two ashrams. So Brahmanas 4, Kshatriyas 3, Vaishyas 2 ashrams. Basically, they are only Brahmachari and Grihastha. I can't remember explicitly Prabhupada stating everywhere which two ashrams. He states Vaishyas have two ashrams, but then another place you hear how Brahmanas, Kshatriyas and Vaishyas go to Gurukul in the Brahmachari ashram, but Shudras don't usually go to Gurukul. So then I assume that out of the two ashrams, one is a Brahmachari ashram, because Vaishyas do go to Gurukul, and then the second ashram would be a Grihastha ashram. Okay, and then Shudras are only one ashram, so they're Grihasthas normally, like that. So like I said, the goal of the Hare Krishna movement is to create Brahmanas, and then leaders of society. Prabhupada said this is like a headless society out there. So a society, you know, just like a person without a head can't function for too long, a society without a head or a spiritual aim or spiritual direction can't function very well. So Prabhupada wanted to create brahmanas who can lead society, and not just our society, but just society in general, by example, and guide them. Okay? Now we're always asking, one thing comes to mind is there's always this big question, why haven't we implemented Varnashram yet, okay? Now, I would say it's kind of our responsibility, people of our generation, because this is the first time since Prabhupada's movement started 50 years ago that people are slowly entering into the age where they would normally take Vanaprastha life and then take sannyas like that. And also, us in this room should set the example, and then if we start following Varnashram, then over time, slowly, maybe over the next couple of centuries, it'll manifest in full bloom. And Lord Chaitanya's movement is meant to last for 10,000 years, so we have enough time like that. But we shouldn't wait for other people to come up with a plan for Varnashram and let's do this and an organizational plan. But Varnashram is a personal thing, it's not a organizational thing. So when one goes through Brahmacharya and Grihastha life, it's recommended that you take Vanaprastha and Sannyas, at least those who are second initiated. Now, Varnashram needs a lot of planning. And one interesting analogy which I found is it said that a devotee should be like a thief. Okay? So I'll tell you how. Okay, I don't know if you'll get anything from his class, but at least I'll tell you about the science of stealing and how it works, so you can at least you have something to go away with. Now, did you know that there are three steps to a robbery or a theft or a burglary or whatever it is? So the first step in stealing is called the approach. Okay, the approach is where a thief enters a house or a shop or a bank or a whatever it may be you're trying to steal. So that's very important. You need to enter, okay? If you don't enter, you're not going to steal anything. So that's the first part. Well, the second part of stealing, the science of stealing, is called the act. Okay, the act is when the thief or the burglar would enter the house or the shop and rob and steal and get everything. you know, he accumulates all the money or whatever it is. But let me tell you that you may think that, okay, it's done, successful. Okay, he's in there, he's made it in there, he's stolen everything, and he's got all the money. Okay, so you may think that's it. But no, that's not it. The third part is the most important part of a robbery. And it's called the escape. Okay? He has to get out. If he doesn't get out, his first two parts are useless. The third part is the most important. But when a thief is planning how to steal, he's not just going to plan how to get in and how to steal the money. That he wouldn't be a very intelligent thief if he does that. A thief plans how to get out as well, even before he's gone in. Okay? So that's all meant to be the plan beforehand. So devotee should also be like that, be like a thief. And Varnashram is a system like that. Even before you enter the Grihastha ashram, you should have a plan how to get out. It may sound a bit strange, but it is true. Unless you plan, it said, you know, one who fails to plan, plans to fail. Okay, so unless you plan before you go in, then you're not going to be able to get out. So I'm planning my Vanaprastha life right now. Just so you know. Anyway, let's see how much of that transpires. But that's the idea, that the plan has to be there. Okay? Because Grihastha life is meant to be the most entangling situation in all the ashrams, okay? Brahmacharis, there's not much entanglement, okay? You just serve Krishna nicely. Vanaprastha life is all about detaching yourself. And sannyas life is about dedicating yourself to serving Krishna. But Grihastha life is entangling. So it's said to be like, that's entering Grihastha life is entering the house of Maya to try and steal something. But you should have a plan to get out. Now in the verse, Prabhupada talks about, very interestingly, about brahmanas and how brahmanas shouldn't bank money or didn't bank money. So in those days, the brahmanas wouldn't save any money. And they would, you know, wherever they get, sometimes you would hear like a brahmanas giving, like being given a donation of like, you know, 500,000 cows or something by the king. And I always used to think, what's a brahmana going to do with 500,000 cows, you know? First of all, where are they going to fit? Like usually brahmanas don't have such a big house, you know, like that. So, but what they would do, they would keep what they need and they would donate the rest. So they wouldn't keep everything. So brahmana wouldn't save for the future. Why wouldn't brahmana save for the future? Do we have any ideas? Anybody want to have a go? Sorry? Dependence on the Lord. Very good. Very good. Any other? That's the most important thing. But any other reasons why a brahmana wouldn't save or shouldn't save? It can cultivate attachment, yes? Somebody else? You don't need it. Yeah, so you take what you need, yeah. And yeah, very good. So the other ashrams support the brahmanas. Like if you look at let's look at the four varnas, okay? So you got brahmana, kshatriya, vaishyas, and shudras. Now, who are the money accumulators in varnashram? Who collects money in varnashram? Basically, there's only two varnas who collect money. The kshatriyas collect money, and the vaishyas collect money, okay? Brahmanas never collect money. It's not their role. Everybody has a role in varnashram. Brahmanas don't collect money. Kshatriyas collect money for the whole kingdom, not for themselves, but for the whole kingdom, because they're meant to look after all aspects of a kingdom, so even financially. So Kshatriyas would collect money. Vaishyas are businessmen, so they would collect money, but they would collect it for their own family. They may not collect it for the kingdom, but they would pay taxes and stuff. So between the Kshatriyas and the Vaishyas, all the money is kind of accumulated. Okay, Shudras don't collect money because Shudras are meant to just offer service to the other ashrams, especially the Vaishyas. Shudras? No, what are we talking about? Yeah, Shudras. Yeah, Shudras are meant to offer service to the Vaishyas and to the Kshatriyas sometimes, and then that's how they're maintained. So the Brahmanas and Shudras don't collect money because that's not part of their role, and the other Varnas are meant to support them. In the same way, even amongst the ashrams, it's the same thing. There's only one ashram that collects money, and that's the Grihastha ashram. The Brahmacharis don't collect money, Vanaprasthas don't collect money, and Sannyasis don't collect money. But very interestingly, those who don't collect money are the richest people in Varnashram. It's a bit like, you know, if you have something, then only what you have is yours. But if you don't have anything, then everything's yours. So it's like, you know, it's like certain things I used to be able to afford while I was in the Brahmachari ashram, I can't afford now. I'm not so rich anymore. Because all the other ashrams are supported and everything can be used for the service of the Lord. Like that. Okay, now I've done that. Okay. Accumulating stuff is, like I said, it's the amongst ashrams, it's a grihastha ashram, and among varnas, it's kshatriyas and vaishyas. Now, there's a very interesting story from Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, which I want to share, which kind of, Lord Chaitanya also gave a lot of importance to varnashram, actually. And like we know, he took sannyas ashram to, he didn't need to because he's Krishna himself, but he took the sannyas ashram to be able to preach and share and set the example. But there's a very interesting story. So there's three brothers in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes who are very, very famous. Govinda Ghosh, Madhava Ghosh, and Vasudev Ghosh. So they're amazing singers and kirtan people, and whenever Lord Chaitanya used to dance and sing, and they, you know, they used to sing for the pleasure of the Lord like that. So they're very, very prominent in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. And they used to stay with, they were with Lord Chaitanya at one point, but Lord Chaitanya ordered Nityananda Prabhu to go and preach in Bengal. So with him went Vasudev Ghosh and Madhava Ghosh. But Govinda Ghosh didn't go with them because Govinda wanted to stay with Lord Chaitanya and get his association. So he's staying with him, and he has a deity called Gopinath. Now, I would like to figure out where this Gopinath deity is, but I don't know, unfortunately. But he has a deity called Gopinath, and he used to serve that Gopinath deity, Govinda Ghosh. And once Lord Chaitanya... You know where he is? You heard about the pastime, yeah. So Lord Chaitanya, once he has his meal, and after his meal, people usually have like this mouth freshener kind of thing. There's different times. You get something called amalaki, which is like gooseberries, made from gooseberries like that, which is a good digestion thing. Then you get another thing called haritaki, which is also good for digestion. So Lord Chaitanya asked Govinda Ghosh for that. Can you get me some haritaki? So he said, fine. So he looked and he asked a few people and he got some, okay? And then he thought, well, let me take a few because Lord Chaitanya may ask it again. So then I have it ready and I don't have to go out looking for it. So then he brought a few and he gave Lord Chaitanya one and he kept the rest. And Lord Chaitanya had it and then he asked him, Shishirada Gokulananda ki jai. So Lord Chaitanya asked Govinda, I think you have saved some haritaki, haven't you? And he goes, yes, yes, I've saved some. So then Lord Chaitanya said, so your mentality is grihastha mentality. You started accumulating and saving things, so you should go and get married. And then Govinda Ghosh didn't want to get married. He was like, oh my God, why? I stayed back here so I could spend time with you and get your association. And just because I saved like a little fruit, you know, you're asking me to get married. But he said, no, that's your mentality. If you're saving things, you'll end up getting married. That's a wrong mentality. You should be situated in the right ashram for your mentality. So he said you should get married. So any brahmacharis, if you're saving prasadam after lunch, it's not good. Or if you're saving sweets after a festival day, it's not the right mentality. Anyway, I used to, that's why I had to change. That was my main reason to change ashram, just so you know. I read this thing, and then I was saying, no, it wasn't, I'm only joking. So Lord Chaitanya asked Govinda Ghosh to get married. So funny enough, he did get married. And then he had a kid as well. He had a child, he had a son. But interestingly, after a while, his wife and his son both left the body. Okay? So then he was alone again, and he was serving the Gopinath deity as usual. Now it's very interesting, you might think, that this guy didn't even want to get married. Lord Chaitanya, who is Krishna himself, asked him to get married. And then after all that, his wife and son die anyway. It's like, he's thinking like, what's going on? So then they left, and then he got so depressed by the whole thing that he even stopped serving the Gopinath deity. So one day the Gopinath deity came to him in his dream and said, he said, Govinda, he said, is it proper that if one of your son dies, you even starve your other son to death. So then he has like a full-on conversation with the Gopinath deity in his dream. He goes, yeah, but you know, my plan was my son will do all my funeral rites and my last rites and stuff like that, and for the forefathers and everything. What am I going to get by serving you? He's like, what benefit do I get by serving you? So then the Gopinath deity goes, he says, don't worry, I will do all your rites, like that. So Govinda is very happy, and then he carries on serving Gopinath like that. And it said that when he left his body in time, the Gopinath deity did his last funeral rites. And it said even to this day, on the disappearance day of Govinda Ghosh, the deity, you know, they have kushagras in his hand, and the deity kind of does his funeral rites. Even to this day, it's a tradition that goes on. So I would like to find out where that deity is. If anybody knows, you can let me know. But it's an interesting story of how Lord Chaitanya, just by seeing the mentality of a person, he could tell. Okay? Now here's, I would like to read something. This is Prabhupada's purport in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, 224-280. Okay, if you want the reference, I can give you. But Prabhupada writes, he says, it is not necessary for a Vaishnava to keep a stock of food for the next day. He should receive only sufficient grain to last one day. The next day, he must again depend on the Lord's mercy. This is the instruction of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When his personal servant Govinda sometimes kept a stock of haritaki, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu chastised him, saying, why did you keep a stock for the next day? Srila Rupa Goswami and others were begging daily, door to door, for the sustenance, but they never attempted to stock their ashram with food for the next day. We should not materially calculate, thinking, it is better to stock food for a week. Why give the Lord trouble by having him bring food every day? One should be convinced that the Lord will provide daily. There is no need to stock food for the next day. So it's interesting. This is the principle. Now, I don't know how we're going to implement it. I don't really have a solution to that. I think it requires a lot of faith and a lot of conviction, and it depends on your advancement in Krishna consciousness as well. If you just say, hey, I'm going to depend on the Lord, but if you're not sufficiently advance spiritually, and if you don't have that relationship with Krishna, maybe you'll just starve or something, I don't know. But if you are sufficiently advanced, maybe Krishna will provide. But it's said that one should, either way, the principle is that even though you are working to fulfill your needs and everything, the principle is that it's not coming because of your endeavors, it's coming because Krishna is providing you. So either way, a brahmana is meant to rely on Krishna. Okay? I'm going to tell you one last thing and finish in a couple of minutes, and then if we have some questions we can take. One last story to finish off with. It's very relevant to this, I find. One of my friends who was in the ashram before, so he was telling me a story of once how, before he joined the ashram, he went bungee jumping. Anyone done bungee jumping before? Okay, anyone thought about bungee jumping? It's, you know what bungee jumping is, right? It's like, you know, you go up like 300 feet or something, and then you jump down, but there's a rope tied to your feet or your chest, and then you kind of, you don't hit the ground, but you stop just before that, and it's sort of an adventure. So everybody, a lot of people like doing bungee jumping because they watch it on TV. It's like a cool thing to do. It's a nice thing to do once in a lifetime, show your friends on Facebook, you know. So a lot of people go, but what happens is, you know, when you go to the top, then people normally chicken out. Because it's like, when you're up there looking down, it's like a different story. From your house, it's a nice thing to say, okay, let's go bungee jumping. So he went bungee jumping. And anyway, they tied the rope and everything, and he was standing at the edge looking down. He was like, oh my God. And then the person behind him said, okay, so I'll count to three and then you jump. So he goes, okay. Now what happens is, when you get to three, a lot of people run backwards, they don't jump. And the people who do the bungee jumping thing, they know that. Okay, so there's a way around it. So he said, the guy counted one, two, and he said, he never got to three, he just pushed me off the cliff at two. Because they know that if you wait till you get to three, you're not going to jump. So they go, okay, jump at three, one, two, boom. So you go down. So now after that, you can do two things, okay? You can come back up and you can shout at the guy saying, hey, that wasn't fair, you know, you pushed me off at two, you said jump at three, that's not right, so you can do that if you want. But an intelligent person would understand that the guy is actually helping you. So he's pushing you off, he told you a lie, he's pushing you off, but actually he's helping you, because if you didn't do that, you'd never have done the jump. Yeah? like that. So sometimes when we have difficulties in our life, we can go to Krishna and say, hey, what the hell, you know, why did you do that to me? You know, that's not right. I wasn't ready for it. Okay? But if you're intelligent, you'll understand that that's just Krishna pushing you off at 2, because at 3 you would never have done it. So I find that very interesting, because in our society especially, I see that certain ashramas haven't functioned very nicely in the past. And we may try to look for a solution for it. But what I see that, you see, in ISKCON, everybody has a dream that, you know, okay, they'll get married, and then, once the grihastha life is over, the kids are 25 years old, they'll take vanaprastha, and then, you know, me and my wife will go traveling, we'll go to visit different, you know, holy places of pilgrimage, and then I'll take sannyas. You know, everyone's got this dream. I don't know if ladies had a dream, but men definitely have that kind of dream, you know. But the thing is, it never happens. Like, when you get to 50, you get to 60, you get to 70, and, you're still there. So sometimes Krishna knows that it's not going to happen, so sometimes Krishna pushes you off. And that push may come in many different ways. I don't know what different ways it may be, but we should see it as a Lord's mercy, and we should thank Krishna for that. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.